Amen. So we're going to be in Nehemiah tonight, the great book of Nehemiah. And we did the first chapter, but I wanted to throw a few things out there. Ezra and Nehemiah in the Hebrew canon, you know, Hebrew canon means the way it was arranged in the scrolls, right? The Hebrew canon have Ezra and Nehemiah as one book. For instance, there's a difference in the Hebrew canon. 1 Kings, 2 Kings, 1 Chronicles, and 2 Chronicles are called 1st, 2nd, 3rd, and 4th Kings. That's just how they are in the Hebrew. And the titles are different in some of the books. Like, for instance, Deuteronomy is, not Deuteronomy, but These Be the Words in Hebrew. So Ezra and Nehemiah were considered one book. Ezra's focus is on the building of the temple. And Nehemiah's focus is on the walls and the city and the gates, okay? The building of the walls. And Ezra is recorded in the book of Nehemiah. You know, he's mentioned, he's named. And it's from chapter 8 on. And Nehemiah is not mentioned in Ezra. Okay? Now, there is a Nehemiah mentioned one time, but he's not the prophet. It's another guy. So much for that. So, chapter 2. Got to get situated a little bit here. Okay, chapter 2. Verse 1, and it came to pass in the month of Nisan, in the 20th year of Artaxerxes, the king, that wine was put before him, and took up the wine and gave it to the king, and now I had not been before time sad in his presence. Remember, we saw at the last verse of chapter 1 that Nehemiah was the king's cupbearer, and that is a bigger deal than what it might seem. A cupbearer was a guy that was totally trusted by the king and probably valued greatly. And they probably had a close relationship because that was the nature of it. You know, when we think about slaves and servants, and probably our ideas of it are skewed by watching movies and such, but certain slaves in the East in Bible times were very valued, and the owner or the master had a great responsibility toward those servants and took care of them. It was a big deal. The slaves that they wouldn't treat well were probably, you know, soldiers that were captive and conquered in a war, you know, something like that. But for the most part, they treated their servants pretty well. we already mentioned that Artaxerxes means great king or remarkable king. And this is probably Darius the Mede of Ezra 6:14 and Daniel 5:21. So anyway, it says here, I had not been before time sad in his presence. And why was he sad? Because in chapter 1, we learned that Jerusalem had been destroyed and the people that were still there were in poverty. And when Nehemiah heard this, he went to God and prayed. It really bothered him a lot. Verse 2, wherefore the king said unto me, why is thy countenance sad, seeing thou art not sick? This is nothing else but sorrow of heart. Then I was very sore afraid and said unto the king, let the king live forever. Why should not my countenance be sad when the city, the place of my father's sepulcher, lies waste and the gates thereof are consumed with fire? So he lays it out. He says, you know, of course I'm sad. My city that my family comes from is destroyed. The gates are burned up. It's a sad, sad thing. Then the king said to me, "For what dost thou make request?" So I prayed to God, the God of heaven. What a great thing. We've seen a couple times, you know, the first chapter, when he hears the bad news, the first thing he does is pray. And here he goes to the king. The king sees he's sad because he has a great love for Nehemiah and a great respect, and they're close. And he says, "What's wrong?" And so he tells him, and he says, "Well, what do you want?" And so what does Nehemiah do? He prays, yeah. I mean, one of the great marks of a man of God is that he's a man of prayer. He prays. He doesn't just blabber off at the mouth, but he goes to God when he needs answers. And I said unto the king, obviously there must have been a little time in between, must have given it some thought and prayed and then came back to the king. And I said unto the king, "If it please the king, and if thy father have found favor in thy..." No, sorry. "And if thy servant have found favor in thy sight, that thou wouldest send me unto Judah, unto the city of my father's sepulchres, that I may build it." And they said, you know, can I go back to Jerusalem, the city, and build it? Rebuild it, really. And the king said unto me, the queen also sitting by him, "For how long shall thy journey be? And when will thou return?" So it pleased the king to send me, and I set him a time. So, you know, king says, "Well, what are you going to do? And what do you need? And how long is it going to take?" And he goes, "Well, it's going to take me this long. And I set a time when he would come back." Now, if you were to go and look at a map, where he was way over, if you're looking at a map, you know, Jerusalem's down on the left-hand side on the bottom, and where he was is way over in the right because he was in Shushan, which is the capital of the Medes in Persia. And he has to go over, and he goes through Babylon and up and around through Syria, Damascus, and down to Jerusalem, which is well over 1,300 miles. Now, if he goes straight across, it's a lot shorter, but it's desert, and it's not a pleasant journey, and dangerous. So he had to set a time. So just the time to get to Jerusalem, 1,300 miles by camel. I don't know, a couple of months. Maybe, if everything goes right, you have no flat hooves or broken legs or whatever. So he sets the time. "Moreover, I said unto the king, if it please the king, let letters be given me to the governors beyond the river that they may convey me over till I come into Judah." Okay, so Artaxerxes, right, he's the king. He's in charge of the whole empire. And all the governors on the other side of the river, which would be the river Euphrates, they're answerable to him. So Nehemiah says, "I need, letters of passport. I need, letters of protection so that I can go there and I'm not hindered or harassed." "And the letter unto Asaph, the keeper of the king's forest, that he may give me timber to make beams for the gates of the palace, which appertain to the house, and for the wall of the city, and for the house that I shall enter into. And the king granted me according to the good hand of my God upon me." So he asked for the letters to get him over safely, and then he asked for wood, timber from the king's forest, which means they have to also deliver it, right? So he's asking a lot. He's not just asking a little, he's asking a lot. But he says, and king grants everything. He says, sure, because God's hand was upon him, meaning God, was working with him and working with in the king's heart. And so he got what he needed. "Then I came to the governors beyond the river and gave them the king's letters." Now this obviously time has transpired, right? He didn't just show up the next day and because it's just the next verse, but obviously there's a time period. And I came to the governors beyond the river, the river Euphrates, and gave them the king's letters. Now the king had sent captains of the army and horsemen with me. Because you know why? He wanted Nehemiah to be safe. He treasured the guy. He really loved the guy and he wanted everything to go good for him. When Sanballat, the Horonite, and Tobiah, what a great name. And when Tobiah the servant, the Ammonite, heard of it, it grieved them exceedingly that there was come a man to seek the welfare of the children of Israel. Okay, there are two Tobiahs that are in the Bible. Tobiah the servant, the Ammonite, in Nehemiah 10, a Jew unable to prove his genealogy, but the reference to the latter indicates that he was already dead. But one Tobiah, and he, the Ammonite, is active in this book. Okay. So he was probably a half-Jew, one of those guys from the Assyrian captivity. That was another thing I wanted to talk about. Okay, so we have the captivity, right? Mm-hmm. And the first captivity was the Assyrian army came in and captured the kingdom of Israel and took the Israelites away. That's the northern kingdom, the 10 tribes, or the 9 tribes, actually. Well, 10 tribes, because there's two half-tribes, Manasseh and Ephraim, right? The sons of Joseph, the twin sons. And then Nebuchadnezzar and the Chaldeans came in and took Judah. But before Nebuchadnezzar took Judah, he captured the Assyrians and conquered them. So then they were under the Babylonian Empire as well. And then the Persians came in and conquered the Babylonians. Get it? Mm-hmm. Now, the Assyrians did the same thing as the Chaldeans. They took the people and took them captive and replaced them with other peoples in the land. And so those Jews were scattered throughout the Assyrian Empire. Well, of course, eventually some of them drifted back, some of them intermarried with the Assyrians. That's why, and they settled in what we would call Samaria, you know, Israel. And so that's why in the Gospels, the Judeans looked down upon the Samaritans because they considered them half Jews, okay? Because they had intermarried, which was a no-no according to the law of Moses. Okay, so we got Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the servant of the Ammonite. When they heard this, they grieved because they didn't want the Jews back there. It was cutting into their whatever. So I came to Jerusalem and was there 3 days. And I arose in the night, I and some few men with me. Neither told I any man what my God had put in my heart to do at Jerusalem. Neither was there any beast with me, save the beast that I rode upon. And I went out by night by the gate of the valley, even before the dragon well, and to the dung port, and viewed the walls of Jerusalem, which were broken down, and the gates thereof were consumed with fire. Wow. So that's pretty crazy. So, you know, it said in verse 4 that he prayed to the God in heaven. That comes up a few times. And the God of heaven was a term that was used because this is called the time of the Gentiles, when God no longer dwells between the cherubims in the temple. You know, in Daniel, what did he do? He faced Jerusalem to pray. Mm-hmm. And here Nehemiah is praying to the God of heaven because there is no temple and there is no cherubims and there is no altar. And he found that out. Daniel wouldn't have known it at the time, necessarily. So that's what's going on there. And the walls are torn down. If you've ever seen pictures, or even if you've seen in a movie sometimes, of the cities in Germany and Europe after World War II, they're bombed out. And all it is rubble. you know, just stones and brick and smoldering wood and just all over a mess. And, you know, very little standing. That's what it was. So, and the gates, of course, were consumed by fire. So, then I went on to the gate of the fountain and to the king's pool, but there was no place for the beast that was under me to pass. Then went I up in the night by the brook. Not sure which brook that is, but anyway, and viewed the wall and turned back and entered by the gate of the valley and so returned. And the rulers knew not whither I went or what I did, neither had I as yet told it to the Jews. And you see, every time you see the word Jew, it should be Judean. The word Jew didn't appear in the Bible till the 1700s. It was Judean. And the term Jew was kind of a derogatory term. And of course, we're going to look at something a little later and you'll understand why. And the rulers knew not whither I went, verse 16, or what I did, neither had I as yet told it to the Judeans, nor to the priests, nor to the nobles, nor to the rulers, nor to the rest that did the work. Then said I unto them, you see the distress that we are in, how Jerusalem lieth waste, and the gates thereof are burned with fire. Come, let us build up the wall of Jerusalem that was to be no more a reproach. Because people would come by and they say, look at this wasted city. There's nothing. It used to be a great city, now it's nothing. It's a reproach. It was an embarrassment. Then I told of the hand of my God, which was good upon me, which means what? That God was blessing him, right? God's good hand was upon me means God was blessing him. As also the king's word that he had spoken unto me, and they said, let us rise up and build. So they strengthened their hands for this good work. But when Sanballat the Horonite, and Tobiah the servant, the Ammonite, and Geshem the Arabian heard it, they laughed us to scorn and despised us and said, what is this thing that ye do? Will ye rebel against the king? Then answered I them and said unto them, the God of heaven, he will prosper us. Therefore we, his servants, will arise and build. But you have no portion, nor right, nor memorial in Jerusalem. So he sets them straight right off. He says, you don't have any part in this. You know, you're making fun of us, you're scorning us, you're mocking us, but you don't have any part in this, so we're going to do it, and it's too bad. Chapter 3. Then Eliashib, the high priest, rose up with his brethren, the priests, and they builded the sheep gate. They sanctified it and set up the doors of it, even unto the tower of Mia. They sanctified it unto the tower of Hananel. Okay, we already read about a bunch of gates when Nehemiah was walking around in the night. The sheep gate was an entrance into the temple area where the sheep and other sacrificial animals were brought and kept. These two towers were on each side of that gate. There were a total of 12 gates of Jerusalem. You know, through the whole city, the wall went around the city. There were 12 different gates, 12 different entrances. The valley gate, the gate of the fountain, the sheep gate, the fish gate, the old gate, the dung gate, sometimes called the gate of the potsherds, where pottery, or the pottery gate, the water gate, the horse gate, the east gate, the gate of Mifkad, also known as the registry gate, the gate of Ephraim, and the prison gate. All are mentioned in chapters 2 and 3, except for 11 and 12, which are in chapters 8 and 12. Okay? So when you're going through, those are the different gates. So there's a lot of them. You don't not really need to know what they are, but it's just, you know, that's what, there was 12 different gates. Okay. And next unto him builded the men of Jericho, and next to them builded Zakur, the son of Imri. Okay, and then for the rest of this chapter, onward, it gives a listing of men and groups, families, and the workmen repairing and building, and the building that they did. So we're not going to read the list because it's really just a list of people. So we're going to jump to chapter 4. If you want to read the list, feel free. Okay, chapter 4, verse 1. But should be and. And it came to pass that when Sanballat heard that we builded the wall, he was wroth and took great indignation and mocked the Jews. He wasn't happy that the Judeans were there building building the walls. And he spake before his brethren, the army of Samaria, and said, What do these feeble Jews, feeble meaning weak, will they fortify themselves? Will they sacrifice? Will they have an end in a day? Will they revive the stones out of the heaps of the rubble which are burned? So what's he saying? He's saying, you know, these guys are weak. What are they going to do? They're going to build up out of the rubble? What are they going to do? And that's exactly what they did. They took the rubble, they cleaned it up, took it out, and they used the same stones to build the walls. And the NIV says, what are these feeble Jews doing? Will they restore the wall? It's a lot easier to understand. Verse 3. Now Tobiah the Ammonite was by him and said, even that which they build, if a fox go up, he shall even break down their stone wall. He's mocking them because why? What? A fox is a little animal. You know, I mean, you know, it's like a dog, right? But they're small. They're tiny. They're not like wolves or Great Danes or St. Bernards. They're just little. They're like, you know, I don't know. Probably weigh 30 pounds or something, 40 pounds. They're not very big. He says, even a fox, if it runs up on it, will break it down. Hear, O our God, for we are despised, and turn their reproach upon their own head, and give them for a prey in the land of captivity. Wow. And cover not their iniquity, and let not their sin be blotted out from before thee, for they have provoked thee to anger before the builders. So built we the wall, and all the wall was joined together unto the half thereof, for the people had a mind to work. So unto the half means they built it halfway up. If it was originally a 40-foot wall or whatever, they built it up 20 feet. If it was 20 feet, they built it up 10. It doesn't tell us how high it was. But they built it halfway. They got halfway, and they did the whole city halfway. And they had a mind to work. They had a heart to work. You know, they really put everything into it. But it came to pass that when Sanballat and Tobiah and the Arabians and the Ammonites and the Ashdodites heard that the walls of Jerusalem were made up and that the breaches began to be stopped, then they were very wroth, which means what? Angry, right? And they were beside themselves. And the breaches means that all the holes were closed up. Every place where people could come through, they were closed. They couldn't do that anymore. It was no more easy entry. So all these different groups came together and conspired against the Judeans. not because they were buddies, but because they all disliked the Judeans. You know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend, or stuff like that. So these guys came together and conspired because they didn't like them. They didn't want them to build the wall. They didn't want to see them succeed. And they conspired, all of them together, to come and fight against Jerusalem and to hinder it. Nevertheless, we made our prayer unto God and set a watch against them day and night because of them. Again, he goes to God in prayer, and he leads the people in prayer. He's a great spiritual leader. He's you know, doing what he's supposed to do. God put it on his heart, and he's doing his best, and he's getting the other people to follow him and do it, and he's doing it God's way, which you can't ask any more than that. So we made our prayer to God. Nehemiah, he led him in prayer, again, as a man of God. And they set a guard, meaning, you know, they just were prepared to defend themselves if they had to. And Judah said, "The strength of the bearers of burdens is decayed, and there is much rubbish, so that we are not able to build the wall." The ESV says, "The strength of those who bear the burdens is failing." Means that we're getting tired. You know, they get worn out. And our adversary said, "They shall not know, neither see, till we come in the midst among them and slay them and cause the work to cease." Again, this is kind of a confusing thing, because the Judeans are saying this, right? Judah said, "The strength of the bearers of burden." This is the other people that aren't really a part of it, and they're saying, there's contentions here and there's divisions behind the, you know, this. And they're saying, you know, they're getting tired and it's too much rubble and we're not going to be able to build the wall. And our adversary said, "They shall not know, neither see, till we come into the midst among them and slay them and cause the works to cease." And it came to pass that when the Jews or Judeans which dwelt by them came, they said unto us 10 times, "From all places whence ye shall return unto us, they will be upon you." NIV says, "Then the Jews who lived near them came." In other words, there were Judeans that had been left behind in the captivity. And they, you know, they were just hanging out, living there. And they came to see these guys that came back from the captivity. And they say to them, they told us 10 times, "Wherever you turn, they will attack us." And the ESV says, "At that time, the Jews who lived near them came from all directions and said to us 10 times, 'You must return to us.'" Get out of here. Get out of the, you know, stop doing this. So, verse 13, "Therefore I set in the lower places behind the wall, and on the higher places I even set the people after their families with their swords and their spears and their bows." And the ESV says, "So in the lowest parts of the space behind the wall, in open places, I stationed the people by their clans with their swords, their spears, and their bows." That's what he did. So, pretty wild. So you can see that, you know, God told him to go. The king gave him the letters and protection. He even sent some soldiers with him. But when they got to doing the work, all of a sudden they got problems with these guys, these Samaritans and these foreigners and people that had been living in the land and didn't want the Judeans to come back. So, verse 14, "I looked and rose up and said unto the nobles and the rulers, to the rest of the people, 'Be not afraid of them. Remember the Lord, which is great and terrible," or awesome, "and fight for your brethren, your sons, your daughters, your wives, and your houses." He said, you know, don't be afraid. Rulers means, it's the word, I guess, in Chaldean for the magistrates or prefects, government officials. guys that, you know, the king had sent there to oversee the land and stuff like that. So he said it to the rulers and to the other people. And it came to pass when our enemies heard that it was known unto us, and God had brought their counsel to naught, that we returned all of us to the wall, everyone unto his work. So they're working hard. And it came to pass from the time forth that half of my servants wrought in the work, and the other half of them held both the spears and the shields and the bows, and the Habergeans and the rulers were behind all the house of Judah. So Habergeans are, it's armor. It's like a coat of mail. You know what a coat of mail is? It's like little chains, and they're all put together, so protects the chest. And the rulers were the princes, and they were behind, meaning they were encouraging the people. These guys, these officials and the higher-ups, they were encouraging the people to do the work and to stand strong. So that's pretty good. They which build it on the wall, and they that bear the burdens, with those that laid it, every one with one of his hands wrought in the work, with the other he held a weapon. That's pretty wild in itself, you know. They're working one-handed, holding a weapon and working. For the builders, everyone had a sword girded by his side, and so builded. And he that sounded the trumpet was by me. And I said unto the nobles, to the rulers, to the rest of the people, the work is great and large, and we are separated upon the wall, one far from another. In what place, therefore, ye hear the sound of the trumpet, resort ye hither unto us. Our God shall fight for us. Boy, and he keeps reminding them of that. Keeps reminding them that God is great. God is awesome. He's going to protect them. He's going to fight for them. And that's what a man of God does. He encourages the people to look to God. So we labored in the work, and half of them held the spears from the rising of the morning till the stars appeared. That's a long day. Likewise, at the same time, said I unto the people, let every one his servant lodge within Jerusalem, that in the night they may be a guard to us and labor on the day. So neither I, nor my brethren, nor my servants, nor the men of the guard which followed me, none of us put off our clothes, saving that everyone put them off for washing. In other words, they stayed dressed and ready in case they had to fight. And they would take turns washing their clothes, I guess, and getting cleaned up, so on and so forth. So, chapter 5. And there was a great cry of the people and their wives against their brethren, the Jews. For there were that said, we, our sons and our daughters, are many. Therefore, we take up corn for them that we may eat and live. So something's going on here. The people, the common people, not the rulers or the nobles, who had returned with Nehemiah. For there were that said, we, our sons, our daughters are many, therefore we take up corn for them that we may eat and live. Some also there were that said, we have mortgaged our lands, vineyards, and houses that we might buy corn because of the dearth. So these are the people that are in the land, and a dearth is what? A famine, right? They're not having a lot of luck with their farming. Maybe there was a drought, you know, and they're just not living very well. So they're mortgaging their lands and their vineyards and everything so they can buy corn to survive. There were also that said, we have borrowed money for the king's tribute, and that upon our lands and vineyards. And also just to pay our taxes, We've also borrowed money against our land and so forth, and our vineyards and all that stuff. Yet now our flesh is as the flesh of our brethren, our children as their children, and lo, we bring unto bondage our sons and daughters to be servants. And some of our daughters are brought unto bondage already, neither is it in our power to redeem them, for other men have our lands and vineyards. So what happened was, the nobles and the guys that had money and control were lending money to these people so they could pay, but they were holding mortgages, liens against their property and their farms and their vineyards. And then part of the Eastern culture was you would sell your child into indentured servitude, which in the future you could redeem them back. You could buy them back, but they had no money to buy back their daughters or their sons. So this is what they're complaining about. And they're telling Nehemiah. And Nehemiah says in verse 6, I was very angry when I heard their cry and these words. He was not happy at all. Then I consulted with myself, and I rebuked the nobles and the rulers. And said unto them, ye exact usury, every one of his brother. And I set a great assembly against them. So what did he do here? He was angry. These people were lending money, and they were charging interest on top of everything of the fellow Judeans. This was not right according to the law of Moses. So if you hold your place here and go to Deuteronomy chapter 23, we'll see what the law says. Deuteronomy 23, verse 19. It says, thou shalt not lend upon usury. Usury is interest, right? To thy brother. Usury of money, usury of victuals, or victuals, usury of anything that is lent upon usury. Unto a stranger thou mayest lend upon usury, but unto thy brother thou shalt not lend upon usury, that the Lord thy God may bless thee in all that thou settest thine hand to do, to in the land whither thou goest to possess it. Go to Leviticus chapter 25. Leviticus 25 and verse 35, it says, and if thy brother is waxen poor and falleth in decay with thee, then thou shalt relieve him. Yet thou he be a stranger or a sojourner, that he may live with thee. Take thou no usury of him or increase, but fear thy God, and thy brother may live with thee. Thou shalt not give him thy money upon usury, nor lend him thy victuals for increase. For I am the Lord your God, which brought you forth out of the land of Egypt to give the land you the land of Canaan and to be your God. So back to Nehemiah. So I was going to tell you why the Jews were not liked in Europe. So during the Middle Ages and even before, in you know, from the maybe second century on, as the church grew strong, they said that it was not right to lend money for interest or usury. But the Jews, according to the law, could lend to Gentiles. So as things progressed in Europe over the generations and centuries, the Jews became the bankers of Europe. And because of that, many people hated them because they got rich, you see? So that's what, a little bit of the history of why the Jews were hated in Europe a lot of places. Anyway, just a little sidelight. So Nehemiah called a council to settle this dispute It's a problem among the people. It was a division. And he called the officials and the nobles. Verse 8, it says, and he conspired all of them together to come and to... No, that's the wrong place. Where am I? 5:8. I went back and I was looking at 4:8. And I said unto them, we, after our ability, have redeemed our brethren, the Jews, which were sold unto the heathen. And will ye even sell your brethren, or shall they be sold unto us? Then held they their peace and found nothing to answer. He so confronted them that they were speechless. They had no answer for it because they knew that they were wrong. You know, just he had them dead to rights, and it was causing problems and divisions among the people. And, you know, holding up the work a little bit. Verse 9, and I said, it is not good that you do. Ought ye not to walk in the fear of our God because of the reproach of the heathen, our enemies? He said, you know, we're getting attacked from all sides here, and you guys are causing problems between us. We need to stand together. I likewise and my brethren and my servants might exact of them money and corn, and I pray you, let us leave of this usury. You know, let's get out of this. Let's forget about this. Verse 11. Restore, I pray you, to them even this day, their lands, their vineyards, their olive yards, and their houses, also the 100th part of the money and of the corn and the wine and the oil that ye exact from them. The 100th part was the interest. It was actually 100th part a month, so it became 12% over a year. Okay. These guys were slick. Then said they, we will restore them and we will require nothing of them, so will we do as thou sayest. Then I called the priests and took an oath of them that they should do according to the promise. So he called the priest to be a witness of the agreement. So, you know, in other words, they were the men of God, supposedly, and they were making this promise, this oath. So, you know, for them to go back would be a pretty serious breach. Also, I shook my lap and said, so God shake out every man from his house and from his labor that performeth not this promise, even thus be he shaken out and emptied. And all the congregation said, amen, praise the Lord. And the people did according to this promise. Okay, he shook his lap was an Orientalism. You know, they had these folds in their robes and they would carry stuff. And if somebody shook out this fold, they emptied it out, it meant, you know, it's like God's going to empty you out. There's a place in Acts 18:6 where Paul was in Corinth, I believe, and he went into the synagogue and he preached Christ and they said, no, we don't want to believe, and they kicked him out and he said, I shake my raiment, meaning I empty it. You're on your own. God's blessing is no longer on you. So, verse 14. Moreover, from the time that I was appointed to be their governor in the land of Judah, from the 20th year even unto the 32nd year of Artaxerxes king, that is 12 years, I and my brethren have not eaten the bread of the governor. You know what this means? I have not eaten the bread of the governor. Nehemiah did not take advantage of the people. He didn't say, okay, I'm the governor. You guys got to give me taxes and food. And in other words, he didn't eat and he didn't do that. He didn't use his office or authority to enrich himself. As a matter of fact, he lived by his own means and he fed others. So, but the former governors that had been before me were chargeable unto the people and had taken of them bread and wine beside 40 shekels of silver. yea, even their servants bear rule over the people, but so did not I because of the fear of God. Yea, I continued in the work of this wall, and neither brought we any land. He didn't buy any land. He didn't, you know, get a piece of property. And all my servants were gathered thither unto the work. You know, and he had servants. Remember, he had an important job for the king, Artaxerxes. And he himself was a wealthy man back home in wherever it was, Shushan. And so he had servants of his own. He was a servant of the king, but he was such a high ranking, he had his own servants. Moreover, there were at my table 150 of the Jews and rulers, besides those that came unto us from among the heathen that are about us. You know, he took care of these people and other heathen that were supporting him and helping him, other, meaning Gentiles. Now that which was prepared for me daily was one ox, six choice sheep, also fowls were prepared for me, and once in 10 days stores of all sorts of wine. Yet for all this required not I the bread of the governor, because the bondage was heavy upon the people. You know, he had a heart for the people, didn't he? He wasn't going to put them into more poverty than they were already in. He just wanted to build Jerusalem back and get these people back to where he thought they should be for God. Think upon me, my God, for good, according to all that I have done for this people. And that's where we're going to stop. Okay? So what a great guy. He really had a heart for God. He had a heart for God's people. He prayed to God. He led people in a spiritual way. He confronted them when they didn't do what they were supposed to do. But he did his best. And he didn't enrich himself. He did it because of the love of God he had and the love he had for God's people. And that's just the way he lived. What a great thing, huh? So we're going to stop there tonight. And then we'll pick up next time in chapter 6.